הנה מה טוב ומנועים שבשכים גם יוחד. So a great debt of gratitude to Yeshiva University and to the OU for drawing together Jews at such an auspicious time immediately after Kimu Bekiblu to learn about our holy book from so many different directions and from so many different people. A very simple process to begin this program is to discuss how the Tanakh has been studied over the ages. And to begin with, of course, perhaps our earliest source for how and when is Chamisha LeMikra. We should start studying Tanakh at the age of 5. There was a Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Tainis where Rish Lakish's 3-year-old boy, he's called the Anuka in the Gemara, did not yet reach Malachi in terms of answering a question that Rav Yochanan asked him, and he said, if I were just a little older, I would have known Malachi. I wouldn't have to rely on your Rebbe in order to answer, give your proof that you want to teach me today. We just understand that at such a time, even the time of the Gemara, our young ones were fully steeped in this. And I begin my presentation with a lament from Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who writes in his 18th letter of the 19 letters of Ben Uziel, he complains about the very sorry state of the study of Tanakh in Germany at his time, where the average yeshiva bacher maybe knows a pasuk based on a tosfos, and maybe where it appears in the Gemara, but imagine what he would say about the study of Tanakh in our own day. But this is the lament. He blames it on Rabbeinu Tam. It's Rabbeinu Tam's fault. He says 800 years ago he established a study of Tanakh, which is at fault for the sorry state today in the yeshiva world. What did Rabbeinu Tam do that was so wrong? It's amazing because Rabbeinu Tam's older brother, Shmuel, himself laments in a commentary at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev for the sorry state of the study of Tanakh in his own day. I guess anyone could say it in his own time, because mitoch chasidusam, everyone is such a chosid, they only study the Talmud. What was Rabbeinu Tam's statement? It's a tosfos that appears in 3 Masechtos in Sanhedrin, in Maseches Avodah Zarah, also in Maseches Kiddushin, where the Gemara says that we should divide our day of study into 3. 1/3 Tanakh, 1/3 Mishnah, and 1/3 Gemara. And Rabbeinu Tam, commenting on the Gemara that says, why is the Talmud Bavli called the Talmud Bavli? Now, I bet everyone in this room would say, hello, it comes from Bavel. Alright, but the very fact that the original word Bavel in the Torah, in Bereishis, is connected to the word Kishon Balal, a mixture, Bavel is a mixture. So the Gemara says Talmud Bavli is a mixture of Belula B'Mikra, Belula B'Mishnah, Belula B'Talmud. It quotes Mishnayos all over the place, it quotes Psukim all over the place. So Rabbeinu Tam said, because of this Gemara, Anu Potrim Is Atzmenu, we can fulfill our obligation of this, a third Tanakh, a third Mishnah, and a third Talmud, by just learning Talmud Bavli. That'll do it. And that's all you need to know, just the Talmud Bavli, and you'll fulfill your obligation of learning as much Tanakh and Mishnah as the Gemara said. So Rav Hirsch blames the sorry state of Tanakh study on Rabbeinu Tam. And with full respect to this blame, the fact is that long before Rabbeinu Tam, this was a well-known shita. It's a shita that appears actually in Chazal. It appears in Bereishis Rabbah, it appears in Koheles Rabbah, on the pasuk Kol HaNecholim. All of the tributaries go to one particular place, El Hayam. They all go to the same larger place of water. And Chazal learned from there all the study of Jewish literature. Everything you need to know can be found in that one sea of Talmud. So we already have in our traditional sources the blame can be placed that we don't study Tanakh as much as we need to. It's all there in the Talmud. This is cited by the Machzor Vitri. It's cited by others well before Rabbeinu Tam, but it's still out there. It doesn't matter whether Rabbeinu Tam said it or Rav Tzemach Gaon said it or someone before him said it. And I turn your attention, please, to the first source on this page, where Rabbi Eliezer on a bed giving advice to his Talmidim. A number of Gemaras in Shas have a very ill Rabbi Eliezer. giving advice. And here, when they came to visit them, they asked him for his parting words, or perhaps some wisdom they could take with them. And among those parting words, we find what appears on the back of many rabbis when they're speaking on Shabbos. There it says, Da lifnei mi ata omeid. Only he says it in plural, De'u lifnei mi atem omdim. And one of those parting words is, Min'u b'neichem min ha'higayon. Keep your sons, it doesn't say keep yourselves away, but keep your sons away from higayon. This definition, higayon, which appears in a number of places in Shas, appears at the end of Maseches Sanhedrin, a few other places in rabbinic literature, is widely described in many different ways. In fact, Naftali Weider, in his Sefer on Karaism and the Dead Sea Scrolls, he renders 30 different interpretations of what Minu B'neichem in Higayon is, in addition to approximately this many interpretations of what we find in the Qumran texts of a book called Sefer Hege. He, Gimel, He. We find that this representation very often in Qumran texts, and there are many different interpretations amongst the scholars of what is Sefer Hege. Why were the Dead Sea Scrolls so interested in Sefer Hege? What is a Sefer Hege? And his own position is, he suggests a few that are more appropriate than others, more convincing than others, but he claims simply from the pasuk v'higita bo yomam v'layla, Sefer Hege is Tanakh. So that Rashi, perhaps understanding this, interpreted minu b'neichem en higayon lo targilum b'mikra yoser midai mishum demoshcha. The man who revolutionized the study of Tanakh for us understands this Gemara not sophistry, as some say, not Greek philosophy, as some say. The word higayon, I believe, in modern Hebrew means logic. Yet Rashi understood this to mean lo targilum b'mikra. Your sons, keep them too much away from the mikra. B'mishum demoshcha. This thing will drive them away. Drive them away from what? So I quote to you Rav Tzemach Gaon, who says, keep your children away from biblical texts that may draw them to heresy. There are biblical texts that would draw you to heresy? Who ever heard of such a thing? Well, there's a whole book in Chazal, Vayikra Rabbah, says that the rabbis wanted to gonaze and remove from the canon because it's no teleminus. It says Vayikra Rabbah in Perek Yud, it says that Sefer Koheles may draw you in this direction. And Rav Tzemach Gaon actually picks on one particular chapter in Yirmiyahu, chapter 12, which begins with the words, Madua derech rishoim tzolecha, why do the wicked thrive in this world? And he questions whether the children should be studying such a text, or whether Yirmiyahu actually renders an answer to this age-old question. So Rav Tzemach Gaon says it's not necessarily the Tanakh per se, but not Mikra per se, but perhaps this is how we could read Rashi as well. The parts of Tanakh that will be Moshech, that might drive you away from either more important study, or perhaps even drive one to Chas v'Shalom heresy. We do see in the Tshuvas HaGaonim, we see in other places, that this Gemara is actually cited, Menu Atzmechem Mina Higayon. Keep yourselves, not your sons, who may be impressionable, maybe too young to know the difference between the right and the wrong way to read Perek Yud Beis of Yirmiyahu, and in this case they read Menu Atzmechem. Now, the terminology Mishum Demoshcha ought to concern us. What do we mean Mishum Demoshcha? I turn you to two Gemaras, one in Maseches Yuma. This is not the source that's before us there, though. One in Maseches Yuma, one in Perek Kol Kisvei and Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara in Yuma is in Daf Yud Ches, where the Gemara talks about how they would assure that the Kohen Gadol would remain awake all night. He had to stay up all the night before Yom Kippur. You think that the day was difficult enough for him. He was up the night before. He's not allowed to sleep. And the Gemara tells us stories about how they maintained this awakened state for the Kohen Gadol. Remember, at this time, many of them were Amaratzim. And it discusses what the Talmidim would teach, would read to the Kohen Gadol during that time. And one goes on to say, I would have to teach him Daniel. And Rashi explains that Daniel is Moshcha. It's an exciting story. Other Rishonim say Daniel because there was such Amarats in these Kohen Gadols that they didn't understand Hebrew. They only understood Aramaic, and Daniel has a lot of Aramaic in it. So they had to read Daniel in Aramaic to them so that they would understand it. But this is Moshech, it's an exciting story. Who doesn't know the story about Daniel in the lion's den and Daniel in the furnace? So this is a Moshcha. It's exciting. It's not that it Chas V'Shalom will lead to heresy. It'll drive you away from the time you need for your other studies. And the Gemara in Shabbos talks about the need for Shiurim, especially in Ksuvim, for the Balabatim on Shabbos afternoon. This seems to be the source for every shul always has a shir leading into Mincha. Pirkei Avos at this time draws from this source that we want to teach them sources that are Mosheich. Moshe Rabbeinu, according to tradition, died at this time, and we should read stories that will be Mosheichas to Torah, because at this time period it's more likely that the Jews who had a nice Shabbos Shlof, they'll come back to Shul to hear appealing stories that are Mosheich. So this is perhaps what Rashi meant, and why the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Talmud Torah in Perek Aleph that while it's true that the Talmud tells us that you should divide your day into three, but that's only in the early parts of your learning. Once you reach Bamedvar Mamur Betchilas Talmudo Shaladom Avakashi Yagdil Bechachma, you reach a certain stage of your wisdom. Lo Yitzorach Lo Lemotar Shebechsav. You don't have to learn Tanakh any longer. Then you should just put your mind to Svara, to learn things Davar Mitoch Davar. Not just knowledge, but analysis and comprehension and synthesis and other higher cognitive levels of learning than just learning Tanakh. Now, I might apologize to the Rambam that if I were not married at 18, where the same Mishnah tells me I'm supposed to be married, I have not, therefore, fulfilled my obligation and said, all right, I missed the boat at 18, I don't have to learn, I don't have to get married anymore. Of course not. The Rambam is assuming that by the time you reach the age of 10, that you've completed your Tanakh studies. And by the time you reach the age of 15, that you've completed your Mishnah studies, now you're ready to study Talmud. There are programs in Eretz Yisrael, and I believe there's even one in America, that actually teaches the students this way. They teach only Tanakh from 5 to 10, only Mishnah from 10 to 15. Today, everyone wants to make sure that their children are studying Gemara in what, 5th grade, 4th grade, however, every year they're going a year earlier. They're not ready for it. They haven't learned all Mishnayos yet. They haven't learned all Tanakh yet. But that comes from the Rambam indeed. So we have our understanding of what Harashi sees the word Higayon. We have our understanding of what Moshcha means. Now I turn to the Aruch, who explained Higayon. Rav Nosson explains that Higayon means, get this, Pitron Pasuk Kitzuraso. In the Aruch, the word Higayon is taught to mean Pitron Pasuk Kitzuraso, which we might understand as Pshat. So I take you to a Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Mem Tes that says, remember, at the time of the Gemara, we didn't court. We didn't have a lot of time to find out about the person we're about to marry and spend the rest of our lives with, so we would build certain conditions into the Kiddushin. We would say, Hare at mikudeshes li al manas, we are betrothed to me on the condition that either you have something about yourself or that I have something about myself. The machlokas in the Rishonim, whether this itself is the Kesef Kedushin or this is built on top of the Kesef Kedushin. But one of these conditions, and Daf Mem Tes, the Gemara says, is Hareat Mekudeshes Li'amanas She'ani Karyana. You are betrothed to me on the condition that you enjoy so much being married to a Balkore that as soon as you see that I'm a Balkore, you'll say, yes, I want to marry him. Okay. Take this to the west side. I think it'd work. Guys, whatever you can do. But as soon as the Gemara says, he reads three psukim publicly, Mikudeshes. She agrees, that's her hana, that's her pleasure, that she wants to be married to a karyana, as soon as he reads three psukim. We say, not so fast. From here we see that anyone who reads the Torah ought to understand what they're saying. When I work with a bar mitzvah kid or my own children, I remember you had to go over the whole parsha before. You spend a year not just laning and not knowing what you're saying, to know what you're saying. Gemara says that if you want to be called a karyana, v'tzorach sheyetargim. He has to translate those three psukim. So Gemara says, yetargim midaite? What do you mean, just translate any way you want? And the Gemara says, no. That would be, if you mitargim a pasuk kitzuroso, hareze bedai. It can be bedai, which Rashi understands to mean so sure of yourself that I know how to translate Torah. The hamosif olav. And if you want to add to what you think the pitron hapasuk is, hareze mechare from a gadeif. You may be cursing chas v'shalom if you add to the meaning of the pasuk on your own. So the Gemara asks, so what does he mean by ad sheyikra v'yitargim? Gemara says, Targum Didon, our Targum, which Rashi says is Targum Onkelos. If you want to be this would-be Karyana who wants to be married, you better know how to read it with Onkelos. So now Rashi volunteers this information. This Rashi, and the source of it, is... If anyone has a source for this Rashi, I'm about to tell you, please step forward. Rashi in Maseches Nedarim seems to contradict what he's writing here in Maseches Kiddushin. Rashi says in Daf Memtes and Maseches Kiddushin that it is so important for this would-be married man, this would-be Karyana, to read the Pasuk like Onkelos, because Onkelos was given at Har Sinai together with the Torah. And when Onkelos changes the meaning of the Torah, Onkelos does so because it's Mehar Sinai. But we may not. We may not veer off in explaining a Pasuk any way which we like. We must stick to the rendition of Targum Onkelos. And Rashi volunteers an example. Rashi volunteers a simple example from Parshas Mishpatim that says, Lo sa'ane al riv, which is taken to mean by the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Daf Yud Zayin, and understood by Onkelos on the page. Perhaps this is based on a Yesh Eim Mesorah type of drosha, because the word Riv, any Balkore can spell that word for me here? Reish Bet. The Yud is missing. And the Targum Onkelos, as well as the Gemara in Sanhedrin, darshens it to say that when you vote in the Sanhedrin, you vote Minatzad. Don't argue on the head of the Sanhedrin, as if though the word is Lo Sanet Al Rav. Can live with that. Do not argue with your rabbi. Very good. So Rashi cites this as the Targum Onkelos, and then he writes, and if this would be Karyana would translate these three words, Lo Sa'ane Al Riv, according to his own opinion, Lo Tashid Al Dino, Rashi says, Eino Mekudeshes. She is not married because he dared have the chutzpah to disagree with Onkelos on his rendition of this pasuk. If you know the direction I'm about to move, you're itching to say, do you know that Rashi, in his Perush Al HaTorah, sometimes by saying so, sometimes by not saying so, how many times he disagrees with Onkelos? Or better yet, Chevra, on this pasuk, in his Perush Al HaTorah, Rashi cites this parish of Onkelos and disagrees with it. There are some really wide differences in Onkelos from Pshat that Rashi could have cited where he agrees. Birchol Shodayim Barechem, three easy Hebrew words. Targum Onkelos renders Birchos Da'aba U'De'ima. And Rashi on that pasuk agrees and says the word Shodayim, a simple Hebrew word, is an Aramaic word, which means to throw. Rashi totally rips that pasuk out of its pshat, agreeing with Onkelos. Fair enough. Why don't you give that example, Rashi? Or so many others where Targum Onkelos is the furthest thing from pshat where Rashi agrees. Why did he volunteer this explanation in Kiddushin Daf Memtes? Because this is the way Rashi learned Tanakh. And I give one additional example before I make my point. In Sanhedrin Daf Tzadik, the Gemara says, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek la'olam haba. Every Jew is guaranteed and vouchsafed a place in the next world. And the Gemara Mishnah says, Ve'elu she'en lahem chelek la'olam haba. These are the people who forfeit their way in the next world. Ha'omer ein tchias ha'mesim min ha'Torah. So Rashi writes, it's not enough that you believe in tchias ha'mesim. Ma'alonu l'munasa. We don't care about your emunah. We want you to believe in tchias ha'mesim. From these drushes that the Gemara brings, the first one, which is Hashem telling Moshe, Hincha shochevim avosecha v'kom ha'om hazeh v'zanah achareya. You are going to die, v'kom ha'om hazeh v'zanah. What's the proof of Tchias HaMesim? Hincha shochevim avosecha v'kom. You're going to die and rise. This is the proof of Tchias HaMesim. So Rashi says, you must agree with all these drushes of Tchias HaMesim in the Gemara, this and a few others. And let me tell you something. Rashi in his Perush al HaTorah, in one place by implication, one place seems to be explicitly, disagrees with these drushes in the Gemara. What's happening here? How is Rashi reading Tanakh? So, I place before you the following proposition. That if you asked Rashi, does Lo Sa'anet al-Riv teach not to disagree with the head of the Sanhedrin? Rashi would say, yes. Why? Because Uncle said so. The Gemara Sanhedrin says so. But Rashi, do you think that the pshat of that teaches what I just said? And he would say, of course not. That's why it's not getting into my perush. That's why I disagree with it in my perush. Do you think in Choshochevim Avosecha Bekom Ha'om Hazeh teaches Tchias HaMesim? And the answer is, of course. Drash is what the Pasuk teaches. Pshat is what the Pasuk says. Shiva Polim HaTorah. There are many different things that the Pasuk can teach. Some of them you might call Shalashuvah's Torah. The Daf tomorrow is going to teach that Stam Nazirus Lamed Yom, and it's going to have a three Daf discussion of how we know that if I just say I'm a Nazir, that I have to be a Nazir 30 days, either because Nazir Elokim Yihyeh, Gematria 30, or get this, Rav Padah, because the word Nazir and Neder appears 29 times in the Torah. And that's how he says Stam Naziros is 29 days leading into the 30th. And the Gemara will have three pages from Daf Dalet till Daf Zayin trying to prove which of these two opinions is correct. Maybe it's just a Mesorah that Stam Naziros is 30 days, like Stam Alvor, Stam Diro, something like that. The answer is, if the Gemara has a discussion of it, this is what the Pasuk teaches. Rashi's not going to disagree. We can learn whole Masechtas, Masechtas Zvochim, half a 90% of what we learn about how to bring the sacrificial order is determined by Drash. So the discussion is here, is that if you read through the pages of the Talmud, you will find the statement, Ein mikro yotze midei pshuto, three times, twice in Yevamos, once in the Sechah Shabbos, and Pashtei dekro b'maiksiv, five times. Outside of that, there are signs where some are more sensitive to pshat than others. You see Rabbi Yishmael clearly having a different derech halimud than Rabbi Akiva. There is a Gemara in the beginning of Gittin where a rabbi said, I can darshan anything. And someone said, oh yeah? How about this one? Kina dimona v'adodeh. Dav Zayin and Mesechus Gittin. What's that? Those are names of three cities that Yehoshua conquered. Oh yeah? Well, let me tell you what it means. If someone has reason to be jealous of another person, and yet he is silent, the everlasting God will give him his reward. What is he doing here? These are names of cities, for goodness sakes. What's happening here? So, I take you to say that there are many, many different things that we learn from our pages of the Talmud. And when it comes to drushes such as this, I will find you a page of Rishonim, and you find from the Tshuvos HaMe'iri, the Rambam and the Mora, a Yerushalmi in Maseches Peah, Ein Makshim Ba'agoda. You find the Ramban in the Tshuva. You find the Hakdama of the Mavol Shas of Shmuel HaNogid. You find in Sefer HaEshkol, many, many Rishonim who say, understand, that when these statements appear in an agadic level, Lav Kishmuahem, we could be somech on them if you want to teach a nice message. But you have to understand that each rabbi had his own position. When Rav and Abaye are arguing over whether we bring this pasuk to teach, let's say nine people punch a man, right? And the tenth one comes and punches him just as hard as the other nine, and the tenth one actually takes him out and kills him. Who is the murderer in such a case? Is there a murderer in such a case? And the Talmud brings a proof in both positions. Get this! From the same pasuk, "Biish ki yakeh kol nefesh adam, mos yumas." Pasuk in Parshas Emor. So that we understand there will be differences of opinions about the darsh and certain psukim, and that's perfectly okay. I'm drawing towards a conclusion now in this direction with the second source on this page. It's Yerushalmi in the Seches Maestros, where Rabbi Zeira is complaining about people who are reading Sifrei Kismi. They are reading books of sorcerers. And he's talking to rabbis who are freely interpreting psukim just the way they want. Now, this is whether he's talking to any particular rabbi. He's saying, I'm speaking against those who make up interpretations according to their own whim of psukim. And the pasuk they asked him about refers to reward in this world and the next. And I draw your attention to the last source on this page, where Rabbi Avohu praised Rabbi Safra in the eyes of what appeared to be Christians, who allowed him to go 13 years without paying taxes because he was allegedly steeped in Tanakh. And finally, after 13 years, they decided, if you're getting all these breaks in taxes, let's at least give him a test. You should give a bechina, whether he's in properly sitting in Koilo, that he gets off on taxes from the government. Let's hear what you say about a pasuk. So they give him a test, a pasuk in Amos. It also was quite a bit polemical in nature about why God punishes the Jews more than any other nation. And he refused to explain what the pasuk meant. So they tied him up, beat him up, and went back to Rabbi Avohu and said, you owe us 13 years back taxes. He couldn't explain this pasuk. And he said to him, the reason for this is because he doesn't live amongst you. I do. I have to be steeped in Tanakh. He doesn't. He has other things to busy himself with. And based on this story and a few others, the Baalei HaTosfos and the Gemara in Bava Kamma and the Gemara in Yesh Noachlim and Bava Basra say that our rabbis in the Talmud were not always so steeped in learning Tanakh. The proof of this that they bring, and I want to get back to the Sifrei Kismi, because Sifrei Kosmim is something that you find in the Talmud, especially in Chul and Dafyud Gimel, where the Gemara talks about heretics whose shechita should not count, because they carry Sifrei Kosmim. They carry sorcery, books of sorcery. What might that be? And the Yerushalmi says it explicitly. People who explain biblical psukim according to their own whim. I would like to suggest to you that this meant Christian interpretation to the Tanakh. Especially in light. I know you may have heard I've heard Rabbi Lamb at least on one occasion refer to this, that whenever the rabbis wanted to say something negative about Christianity or its founder, they applied it to Bilam, who dies at the age of 34. They truly many such activities. And Bilam is also called Bilam HaKosein, the one who initiates. This is what Hinei Ha'am Maharav Yoled Et Ben means. This is what Beis Halachmi means. This is what Tilim Chav Beis means. So they had to really try to come down hard on these whimsical interpretations. But if your interpretation is to enhance your Yiras Shamayim, if your interpretation may be original to yourself, I must say the Chazal are filled with these types of interpretations where it becomes your Torah. It starts off with Torah Hashem Yechefzo Uvisoraso Yehegeo Mambalayo. It starts off as Hashem's Torah, and then when you Mechadesh something, it's your Torah. What's the difference between the Sifrei Kosmim of this Yerushalmi and Chul and Daf Yud Gimel and these references to Bilam HaKosein? Is that their whimsical interpretations of Tanakh moved in the direction of Chas V'Shalom, this very, very sorry turn in our history 2,000 years ago. But if your interpretation, even if it's original and you say, I don't see it anywhere else, I'm a Mechadesh it, maybe someone else said it before you. This is, it seems, what Rashi is saying in these various sources, where he says that I may disagree with it in Pshat and my Pshat Peirush. Maybe there will be some lectures later on today all about Rashi and those who follow in his directions regarding Pshat and Drash. But the each and every one of us should feel the great chiddush of interpreting something and saying, this is my Torah, it's my star. And I conclude just with one chakira that relates to this as follows. Gemara says in Maseches Brachos that God begged Moshe to ask for gold and silver and rewards from the Egyptians so they should not leave empty-handed. Daber nob uznei ha'am. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Tes says that Hashem usually commands. It doesn't beg. It doesn't say please. There are some other places where no is understood to be please in such a setting. Incidentally, Targum Onkelos understands that no to mean now. He says ka'an. When no means please, the Targum says bevo'u. But be that as it may, the Gemara says here that it means please, Moshe, get some gold and silver. That's what I promised Avraham Avinu. Because if you don't get them the gold and silver, oh so tzaddik, and the other side of existence will tell me that avodum ve'inu osam ki'em bohem. You kept your promise to make them slaves for all those years. V'achreichein yetzu b'chush gadol lo ki'em bohem. But to make my children leave with this great wealth, that you didn't keep. Yeah, right, God. You kept your promise in one, but not the other. So Moshe, I beg of you, please, let me be a promise keeper in the eyes of Abraham. So the Marsha and the Gemara, the Mefarshim to Rashi, who brings this down in Shmos, in Perikot Beis, the Mefarshim ask, why does Hashem have to keep his promise that he made to Avram? Because otherwise Avram will be upset. The Avram we know would probably let that slide. And besides, shouldn't Hashem just keep his promise because he's Hashem, and that's the right thing for Hashem to do? So there's a beautiful teretz that you find that's actually based on the parish of Ibn Ezra. Because Ibn Ezra says that the Rechush Gadol in Bereishis means, what is the Rechush Gadol that Hashem promised Avraham, I will give your descendants when they leave slavery? Torah. It's true they didn't leave Egypt. It says Yetzu, right? Yetzu Rechush Gadol. They will leave Egypt already owning the Torah. Or, as Ibn Ezra possibly suggests, a deed to the land of Israel. Which is a nafkamina at the end of Bava Basra, when the people who left Egypt already had a stake in Israel. So this would be a good raya that they left Egypt already with the rechush gadol of owning a piece of Israel. But you know what, Moshe? Here's the point. Avraham thought I meant Torah. Any descendant of Avraham who reads the Torah with yiras shamayim and good intentions, Hashem is looking down at that person and saying, you know what? I may not have meant that. Yeshayahu is looking down and saying, that's not what I meant there. But the person is saying this with Yirat Shamayim. Hashem yilochem lochem batem tacharishun. You think means God will make bread for you, but you must plow? Right? Is that just the stuff of Shalashuvah's Torah and homiletics? It's a good explanation of what the pasuk is saying there. So Hashem is looking down at every one of us. All the chidushim that you will hear today, thanks to all the hard work of your sponsors in the back, the OU, YU, all these wonderful malamdin and machanchim that are standing in the back of the room, who will spread such wonderful Torah, wonderful chidushim all day today. Again, I end as I began. Hinei matovu manoim sheves achim gam yochad. You're in for a wonderful, wonderful time today of chidushim, amischachos b'chol yom. And again, I thank the Menahalim and all those who made this happen. And Groysh Yishkoyach for all of you for attending today. Thank you.